which has then gone into so much Judeo-Christian tradition. I mean, spare the rod and spoil the child. Child is basically a proverb from the book of Proverbs, as you know, if you were at that session. Those of you who were at the first session, remember I told you about how this book came into being, World Treasury of Folk Wisdom, that a student in a course I teach called Literature of Wisdom and I put together. Well, we didn't find a book that we could use that gave proverbs from all over the world. Now, there were books and still are books that are books of proverbs, collections of proverbs, but these are almost exclusively Anglo-American proverbs. Makes sense, because proverbs are very close to our cultural good. There was our cultural wealth. This, by the way, is Reynold Feldman, and we're talking about proverbs from the world's resources. And today is Thursday, the 17th of June, 1993. Hi, Mom. I always wanted to do that. You know, it's one of those kind of things you always sort of want to do in your life. All the world's a stage. But I guess, well, what I was going to tell you about is Ralph Nader and his mother were on a segment of Oprah. And Oprah asked Mrs. Nader, you know, kind of woman to woman, said, Mrs. Nader, how does a mother raise a Ralph Nader? I mean, like, what did you do to get this reformer son out there who's just going against the automobile industry and all these, how did you do that? I mean, how does one, right? And we were talking in the last hour about how do you educate for utopia, in effect, you know. And she said, well, she says, Oprah, she says, in Lebanon, we use proverbs. So I raised my Ralphie with Lebanese proverbs. And I raise all my children with Lebanese proverbs. Now, it's not unusual. Proverbs, proverbial wisdom, is really the way that wisdom has been handed down from one generation to the next. And does anyone here know Chinese? Because if you do, forgive me for ruining the character, because I'm not a very good calligrapher. But the Chinese character for education is very interesting. It's like this, more or less. And that means jiao, which means to teach. It also means education, jiao. And it's a very interesting character. It's made up of three elements, this, this, and this. It's a complex character. And Chinese, by the way, is a visual language made up of abstractions and of kind of calligraphy. For example, I'll teach you Chinese very quickly. This is one, this is two, and this is three, so you now know three Chinese characters. This is human being. This is abstractions, one, two, three. This stick figure means human being. This means mountain. You can see it right outside. You got the tip up there, and you've got the two foothills on either side. So that's how you do mountain in Chinese. Now, if you combine this, there's a combining form of human being, which you sort of flip it up, and it becomes like this. Sort of on its side, and if you put mountain next to it like that and make it a single complex character, that means a hermit, a person who lives in the mountains. Mm.
Oh.
So that's how Chinese works, just to give you an idea. One other one I like to show. This one I told you meant one, right? Now, this, if you take human being and put a line through it, put one through it, it means big. Now, if you put if you put number one and you put a tree on top of it, that means earth. Tu, Mandarin it's pronounced tu, that's earth. If you take this from heaven, that's what I was going to show you, this is heaven, it's big one. One on top, roof, big roof is heaven. So if you take just the top part of heaven and you attach it to earth, you have king, which in Mandarin is Wang. It's a very common surname, as in Aretha Clark King or Martin Luther King Jr. Mr. King or Miss King in China is Wang, Wang. So Wang, or Wang, spelled with an O sometimes, is the person whose job description is to connect heaven and earth, who brings the mandate of heaven down to earth. So you see, within the characters in Chinese, and I didn't know that I was going to end up doing Chinese characters, you have this, but I wanted to show you this about education. This, which is earth, walking stick, and a hook like that, that means old. Lao. Lao Mao means old Mao. Lao. Lao Tzu means the old child. That's the name of the famous Chinese author, supposedly, of the Tao Te Ching. Lao Tzu means old boy. The old boy who wrote that is Lao Tzu. Well, if you take the top part, this, by the way, is a cane or a walking stick. It's a person who has to stick a cane on the earth in order to walk. That's old. So you have earth plus walking stick is old. So you take earth plus walking stick, you don't use the full part of it, but just the top part of it to suggest it. And this one is actually Zhe, that means child. So if you put old above child, and this, you see the legs there? That means to follow. The child, this by itself, by the way, just this part of the character, means filial obedience. Xiao, which is a very major Confucian virtue, that the child is below the elderly. The elderly are on top, the young. And education is the elderly teach the young so that they will follow in the footsteps of the ones who went before, the ancestors. That's what education means in the Chinese tradition. When we talk about it in English, we say educare. It comes, by the way, you've heard a million times, education comes from draw out, right? You've heard that. It's wrong. Banish it from your mind. Education comes from our first conjugation verb, educare, which means to feed. Otherwise, it would be eduction, just like seduction and reduction. They're all from the third conjugation verb, educare, which means to lead forth or draw out. And in fact, Publius Varro, a second century Latin poet and author, made this distinction, obstetrics educit, nutrex educat, which means the obstetrician, the midwife, draws out the baby. The nutrix, the nurse, the wet nurse, educat, feeds. So if you want to know what the actual derivation of education in English is, the word is derived from a Latin verb which means to give the breast to. So education is giving mother's milk to allow someone to grow. That's what our word education means. And in Chinese, a different culture, education, zhao, means the old make sure that the young follow in their footsteps. And there's even a visual pun, because there's a very similar character that's like this, where you don't have a little thing coming up. And that's wen. And wen means literature or culture. So you actually have a visual pun here, and it works out because mainly in a Confucian culture, you got a literary education where you memorized reams and reams of old classics like the Analects of Confucius, and you had to be able to write them in beautiful calligraphy like mine, but really good calligraphy, perfectly verbatim with no mistake. And that you had to internalize all those virtues in the culture so as to become a Confucian gentle person, or a scholar, or a gentleman scholar. For example, Confucius in his Analects says, the gentle person, the well-educated person, asks, will this help others? The small-minded person asks, will it pay? Just for an example. And this is how you were educated. Now, what we did in our book, and I'm going to give you a handout here, some samples, there are 1,000 proverbs there, and here I think I have 43. What I'd like you to do is just read through these.
Memory.
And I'd like you to pick out your three favorites. These are from, in the book we have them from 135 cultures. I haven't counted up here, but maybe about 20 cultures. Just go through there, and if you need a pen, I've got a couple extra ones. Just pick out your three favorites, and then note right on the paper your absolute one favorite. Oh, gee, I gave you the original. Somebody just had page one? Should be both sides of the page. Okay, sorry about that. That's what went to Kinko's and... Huh. Okay. Okay, here's a... Here's a pen.
Thank you.
I got a pencil. Just read through there and pick out your three favorites, and then from... Thank you. And your very top favorite of the three... Just make some notes on the side of the page about why that one top favorite speaks to your condition or interests you. And then we're going to share that for the rest of our time.
Dan, you said that these are all good. How about the rest of the book? I bet the rest of the book is full of good stuff too.
Well.
Can we throw in our personal ones?
Oh, yeah. Well, that actually, in the next session, we're going to be specifically focusing on creating proverbs to live by for ourselves. And ultimately, I suppose, if I were ever a guru, I would say you have to create your own mantra in this world. But it's nice to be able to kind of follow the beaten path out there to Holden Lake, and you don't have to go blaze your own trail with a machete, you know. Fight off the snakes and stuff. So that's what this does. That's really what literature does. It's sort of the experience and the wisdom distilled by hundreds of other people from all ages and places. And if it's still relevant today, or if it's relevant here as well as in Nepal, you got to figure they're onto something, right? I mean, that's the point.
Yeah, I didn't mean my own personal one. Oh. I meant one that I had appreciated before.
Oh, I see. Sure. Absolutely. What we did, I think we'll just start now. We have about 35 minutes. And what I want to do just very quickly before I start passing around the talking stick, a little thing that I haven't done the first two, but it's a special stick with a lot of religious power and magic power to it, and from which the expression comes, getting on the stick, just for your information. But I like to do this little quick and dirty research to find out, we found yesterday, it was really exciting, there were 12 of us, and we had 27 proverbs from the Book of Proverbs, and all kind of a thing like this. And out of 12 people, 6 selected the same one. Now, the probability of that was very remote, actually. And then there were another 2 who selected another one. Then there were 4 which were singletons, right? So just for fun, obviously, there's a lot more here. So even 2 people selecting the same one would be significant, I suppose. But just out of curiosity, we'll just go down the numbers, and I'll only write down numbers where more than one has been selected, but well, maybe where one has been selected too. From your 3 top favorites now, not your absolute favorite now, but your 3 top favorites, anyone have number 1? Just raise your hand if you have number 1. Okay, number 2.
Yeah.
Okay, number 2, we have 2. Okay, number 3. These are from your top 3. Number 4. Okay.
Oh, I got 4.
Oh, okay. A journalist in St. Paul, when he was writing about our book, he picked out some proverbs he liked, and that was one he picked out. And it's interesting. It's like a sort of a Rorschach test for people. I mean, typical journalists, you know, journalists have to be a little bit skeptical, and they're all from Missouri. They have to be shown. And so almost every proverb he picked out was a skeptical proverb, like a person who's always nice isn't always nice. And everyone was like that. It was really funny. Number 5. Number 6, number 7, to be the ones to be able, number 8, Yeah, I knew that. That's good. Okay, hold your hands up again. Let me count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. If we have any statisticians in here, calculate quickly the statistical significance. Number 9. Number 10. Okay, 10 we have 2. You can mark these on your paper too, just for fun. It's a little research. Number 11. Okay, 11 is 1. Number 12. Number 13. Number 14. 15. Oh, that's interesting. 1, 2, 3. Number 16. Number 17. 1, okay. Number 18.
Yep.
Okay, 1, 2, 3, 3. Number 19. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, 4. Number 20. 21. 22. Okay, 1, 2. Hold your hands, please, again so I can see. 1, 2.
Okay,
23, 24, 25, 1, 2, 3. That's what I call the vacation proverb.
It was 25.
Oh, whoops.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Put another one on 22.
Oh, it should be 3. Okay.
Thank you.
Sure, thank you. 26. 27. Yeah. 28. 29. 30. 31. 2. 32, okay. 33, 34, 35, 36, 37, 38, 39, 40. The one that gets laughs usually don't get votes. It's kind of funny. I love number 40, but it's one that I probably wouldn't have voted for. 41. I think that's probably my favorite in the whole book, but yeah, I probably wouldn't have voted for it. 42. And 43. 43 is kind of a Sinhalese carpe diem, you know. Make merry while the sun shines, or whatever. Okay, well, that's kind of interesting. As ourselves as a class, and just kind of circle, this was our first place one, and then we had this one with 4 was our second place one. And then we had 1, 2, 3, 4, we had, so our three top ones, I suppose, we have to go with these. And so just looking again to see what our class felt, the number 8 there is God did not create a hurry, which says something about our lifestyle and what we wish our lifestyle were in terms of utopia. Yeah. That number 19, God is a great worker but loves to be helped, and that's from the Basque. So we have our first one is Finnish, our second one is Basque, and our third one, number 19, is God, well, that's our second one. And then our four-way tie for the next place is 15, silence is sometimes the answer, Estonian. 18, you may light another's candle at your own without loss, generosity. There's a lot of Scandinavian ones in this group, that's interesting too. Then number 22, but that's Chinese, when the heart is at ease, the body is healthy, and more, especially being here in Holden Village with no phones and so forth, and eating low on the food chain, maybe for the first time vegetarian kind of diet for some of us. That's an interesting datum. And then 25, don't bypass a town where there's a friend, Malagasy, Madagascar. Again, maybe a kind of a vacation proverb, so sometimes we might be a little situational in what we select. That's just a possible footnote. But anyway, now comes the interesting part, or another interesting part, is when we pass the talking stick around. This stick, by the way, comes from a church that I hope all of you will have a chance to visit in this lifetime. It's called Calvary by the Sea Lutheran Church in Ainahaina, Honolulu, Hawaii. Pastor Douglas R. Olson, senior pastor. It is the church where, when our children were bad, we would say, if you're not good, you can't go to church on Sunday. We'll be good, we'll be good. Now, I challenge you, you find a church where you can do that with your children and your grandchildren, and you better stick to that congregation because you have arrived. This church is the standard against which I measure all churches. I was there a couple years ago. We're back there now all the time because we're still associate members, though we're in Minnesota. And they have put together a, in fact, President Bush recognized in the state of Hawaii. And if you know what real estate is like in Hawaii, this is the church. Now this church, when we were first there on sabbatical at East-West Center in 1980, had 300 members. Lutheranism is not a big denomination in the state of Hawaii. When we were there 2 years ago, they had just passed 2,000.
Oh my.
And I'm talking about former Buddhists, Jews, Catholics, all kinds of folks are coming to that church. And tonight I might mention a little bit at the forum on community, because the question is, you know, mainline churches, as you know, are not thriving. They're barely holding their own in most cases. So how in the heck does Doug Olson and company do this? And it's very interesting. I intend to write an analysis of it someday because I'm very interested in communities that work. And this is clearly one that does. But they got these halfway houses because they woke up one day and they found there were 12 people living in the parsonage, the pastor, his wife, and 10 other people. Homeless women, battered women, children on parole, children whose parents were divorcing, just all kinds of folks. Half of them had no connection with the parish whatsoever. They weren't Lutheran. I think one of them wasn't even Christian. And they were just there. And so Ivy Olson says to Doug, Douglas, this is wonderful that we're doing this, but I think if we're going to do it, we better do it right. That was the beginning of the Calvary Angel Network, and now they have these 69 halfway houses on Honolulu, on Maui, and on Lanai. And about to spread to the mainland. And Doug and Ivy were just invited to the White House by President Clinton. So something that Bush liked, that Clinton also likes, is either very suspicious or very interesting. And they were just invited in there among 40 people as doing one of the best social welfare interventions in the whole country. And this is the whole congregation that does it. Anyway, this stick, I did a series of workshops at Calvary in Honolulu a couple of years ago, and I picked up this stick on the beach. Church is right on the beach, by the way. It's in the round, and you sit there, you know, during the service, and you see these boats passing by, you know, and palm trees out on the beach, and Doug says, well, I have it that way so that if the sermons are bad, you can at least see something good while you're listening to junk. But he usually uses that as a challenge to make his sermons interesting, and he usually does, or whoever else is preaching. That's also where Leo Biscaglia goes when he comes to the islands, and he's buddies with Doug, and he hangs out there. It's a very huggy, lovey kind of place. In that regard, Doug's come a long way from being a kid from Mankato, Minnesota, whose mother taught Ibsen at the U. She was from the old country. Anyhow, this talking stick, what I'm going to do is pass it around, and whoever has the stick is authorized and empowered to share whatever they have. And this is a very important stick because it's magical. And the magic that it works is that if you're shy, it empowers you to be bold. It's also magic in another way, because if you're like me and can't keep your mouth shut, it forces me to be silent. So this is how the magic works. And who would like to start? Okay.
Now what do I need? I just wanted to point out one more proverb, which I always enjoy. Not that the ones you have aren't good, but It's you only live, and I'm not even sure where it comes from. I believe Chinese, but you only live twice: once when you were born, and once when you die. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's somewhat un-Christian, maybe, but more Eastern. But it doesn't limit life to the period of time that we have here, necessarily, this existence. And I like that concept. I guess it's.
Oh. I think number 17, change it into my favorite. Change yourself and fortune will change.
Oh, nice.
And I think I into that more so when I think about what was happening at work in the last 5 or 6 years, where we were trying to get to the, but the word is quality, but you can't define quality. But it was a process improvement. And what you found out, basically, is that, you know, you'd be asked, how can I change the process? How can I improve it? And you'd say, well, if George over there would just do this, see, and they had this big bell, and they would bang the big bell, gong! They say, no, what can you do? You have to do it. You can't expect George to do it. What can you do?
Number two. Quickly, I came to that because that's kind of been my philosophy. And it's been my philosophy, although it hasn't necessarily been my practice. But I guess my Christian witness doesn't verbalize well. I'm a coward. So my philosophy has been just this, and it reminds me of another saying, what you are speaks so loudly, I can't hear what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So that kind of, and there is another, I don't know that you'd call it a proverb, that I also live by, which I think is very soothing, and that is rationalization is the key to mental health. You have to think about that one a little bit.
Yeah, I do.
This proverb is new to me. At this point, number 25, don't bypass the town where there's a tent. Well, about 4 weeks ago, when we got our airline tickets, before we got them for a vacation, shall we see this party, that party, that party, in the Midwest? Well, we better see them all. They're getting older. And glad we are, because we all see. My wife, Marie, and I all see cousins in Des Moines, Iowa, her brother, and sister-in-law in Kansas City. The old pair of friends in northwestern Iowa, and then quite a number in my hometown where I'll be for my 55th high school reunion. So I like the proverb. I don't think I'll ever forget it again.
Okay, I picked number 22, when the heart is at ease, the body is healthy. And at first I thought that speaks to mental health and its correlation to physical health. Then I got to thinking a little bit more. The reverse isn't necessarily true, because you can have good physical health, but that doesn't mean necessarily that you're going to have good mental health. And then I got to thinking a little bit more about what else heart would encompass, and I thought heart, you know, mental health, but it also includes the interests that you have, and it includes the stage of life that you're in. And then you call time so I didn't get any further. Number 8, God did not create hurry. That really speaks to me, because I find myself hurrying and trying to do too many things. And it's so easy to become anxious and concerned about those things. And
after all, God did rest on the seventh day, so I think he means for us to rest. And a person is healthier if they're not in such a hurry either. Mentally they're healthier, physically they're healthier if they take time for themselves and spend time with God.
Okay.
As you were putting these on the board, you mentioned that some of them are situational. And if we were doing this 3 months from now, we maybe would have different things. My new friend here selected 25, and I've also selected 25. We'll pass a time where there's a friend. And this has been an important one for me this year. I had the chance to stop and visit friends of 20 years that I haven't seen in 20 years, but being able to get into those kinds of areas. And then on the way up here, I was able to stop and visit a nephew that I hadn't seen for a long, long time, and a cousin. So during this year, I did an awful lot of this number 25. 2 years from now, maybe I'd pick some other one on this list. But it was very situational this time.
I picked 18. As usual, I had a lot of difficulty in picking, but I went through the process and worked it down. You may light another's candle at your own without loss. Generosity, Danish. Well, love given away multiplies, no question about that. Whether it's unconditional, all love should be unconditional. And it definitely multiplies. And I think it was in some poems or prose by Gerhard Frost that I had read it the first time. He said that if you open a door from a room that's lighted, that both rooms will be filled with light, and it doesn't diminish the light in the other one. And it just seems like when I talk now with some of the students that I've had in earlier years or family, that there will be something that you shared or you said in a unconditional, generous way that they may remember. You don't even remember you said it. And so I think that no question about that. It doesn't diminish your own candle.
Oh, you were there.
I like to relay that.
You're the
winner. Yeah. There were several good ones, and it was a little bit task to pick the one of the lot that was best. But I took 17. Change yourself, and your fortune will change. Which may be somewhat situational, because I'm at a point where I really believe in that we create our own reality, and that we really don't have control over anything except our response to whatever happens to come into our life at any particular time. And it reminds me of a little bit of another saying I want to share with the group, which says, it's not what you think you are, but what you think you are. And then number eight, reminds me of another proverb similar to it: God did not create hurry. I saw this on a desk. Someone had a real cluttered desk, in fact. And it said, a person who is too busy to pray is busier than God wants them to be. Which I thought was pretty interesting.
I, as everyone, had a hard time, but I picked 19, and I think that's my response to some frustration with people not taking responsibility and not being called to action. And I think it also ties in with number 10. They were kind of a tie for me as far as the responsibility and action. It's enough to to know, but you can't just sit around knowing you need to do something. And I think God needs some help once in a while.
Just while you're passing the stick, I'll say there's a wonderful saying by David Starr Jordan, which is, wisdom is knowing what to do next. Skill is knowing how to do it. And virtue is doing it. Mm-hmm. Isn't that good?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Number 8, God did not create hurry. And I think it's very necessary in our world. But then I also wonder, maybe that's what I use sometimes as an excuse for not hurrying. Or maybe now I can, but I know what to do. I too had number 8. God did not create hurry. It seems in our American life, we're in such a hurry to accomplish things, to get assignments done and everything like this. Actually, it isn't so important to hurry, because we can do better if we don't hurry, sometimes.
I chose 27. A life without love is like a year without summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I love summer. And I need here, but I also feel very much that I need love, and I need to give love, and I do give love. And I have a grandchild and 2 grandchildren, and they give it so easy. It's so easy. Mm-hmm.
That, did everyone have a chance?
Mm-hmm.
Any other last words of wisdom?
I was just going to mention that somebody said about number 8, God did not create hurry. I'm wondering if you would dare give that to your class, because they might say, no, I didn't get my assignment done.
Right. Well, we use the book in the class, but they haven't been quite that resourceful yet.
then you tell them virtue is not knowing but doing.
That's your
Would 27 work if you put winter in instead of summer?
Not unless you were a ski freak, I
see. I am.
Yeah. Oh, there it would work for you. But I think, you know, it's interesting with Proverbs, not surprisingly. Proverbs, like a lot of Near Eastern Proverbs, include water as something very good, not surprisingly the Bible does as well. So imagine in the northern countries, like Sweden, for example, where the summer is, I mean, even for us in Minnesota, let's say, you know, the summer is relatively short, and the winter, by contrast, is rather long. And boy, you know, I mean, you just see it in the Twin Cities. You know, when the buds come out, it's usually kind of late April, and when our lilac blooms, it's usually the first week or so of May. And there's like, and this year, I mean, I was doing work down in Mississippi. I was out in LA. I happened to be in a lot of southern climes in February, March, and April. And, you know, it was really kind of weird. I would go down into spring or even summer, and then I would come back to Minnesota and it was still winter. Then I would go down into another part of, you know, all the dogwoods and the magnolias, and I'd come back to Minnesota and the buds were still thinking about it, you know. And then finally, but there's this like, oh my God, thank you, God, you know. Thank you for this day, for this, you know, we're so grateful. We're so sort of sensory deprived and stuff. But we are grateful for it. So you can see in that context, somebody writing this, I mean, just imagine living in Sweden and, you know, the year Santa Claus didn't come kind of thing. So I think they are situational. And of course, even sometimes the same concept is housed in a metaphorical language that's very relevant to the experience of that people. So we say, trust in God, but keep your powder dry. And there's an Iranian proverb in the book that's, tie your camel, then trust Allah. So it's a sort of same thing, you know, in the 12-step program we talk about our part and God's part. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the great, and the serenity prayer, of course, is which is very basic to all of these things, is God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. You know, it's always that razor's edge, you know, I mean, is what's my part in this? And what's the part that I just have to let go and let God about? And of course, as somebody pointed out one of the other sessions, the 12-step program leans very heavily on Proverbs, the mottos, you know, one day at a time, take it easy, let go and let God, progress, not perfection. All those things are Proverbs, and they're things that people, the wisdom prayer itself, are things that people really sort of tie their, you know, really are handholds getting up the mountains of life, you know, because it's hard out there, you know, it's really hard. There's lots of people with all kinds of problems, and yet I, as a believing Christian, I'm in two Al-Anon groups. I have a recovering alcoholic in my family, and I go to two Al-Anon groups in St. Paul, and one is a mixed group, which is mainly women, because it seems a lot of alcoholics happen to be of the male persuasion, and so it's the women who are in the sidecar being bounced along this bumpy road of the alcoholic existence. But the other group is a men's group, and which combines, if any of you have been in men's groups, it's really an interesting phenomenon. And it combines the 12-step program with the men's group. It's quite different, but there's moments of absolute magic where the Holy God, the Holy Spirit, is very present. It's not always, not every time, but you know, needy people are there and they're just basically saying, look God, I can't deal with this, I'm turning this over to you because this is bigger than I am, I can't deal with this. Frankly, I think that's how life is for all of us. And the family, my family member who's an alcoholic, said, gee, I wish there was a 12-step program for everyone, because it's helped me so much, I think, and all of my friends seem to need something, and I wish there would be a 12-step program just for people. And that's been my experience. There's that sort of silence where the trusted servant, the moderator, will say, does anyone have any problems or breakthroughs they'd like to share? And then there's that kind of Quaker silence, that kind of pregnant silence. And you know, sometimes I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, what would happen if no one had anything? I mean, this thing's gonna bomb, sort of this teacher sort of feeling of, how am I gonna fill my hour, Lord? You know, I don't have anything to say, they don't have any questions. Let's just go home and get fired and get it over with. You know? You're sitting there, right? I mean, you've had those experiences sometimes, Claudia, as a teacher. And then, like in the silence of this receptivity, in the silence of really turning it over to God, then someone comes up and said, well, Ethel and I had a big fight yesterday. And then this person in front of a group of strangers starts telling about, you know, kind of got kind of physical and different things that went on. It's really the grace to be able to share that. And I guess I did want to make a kind of concluding segue to the wisdom of Proverbs from international sources, and I apologize to Daniel because I sort of said this point in his group before. But it seems to me one of the skills that we have to learn in our world in transition right now is to go very affirmatively to non-traditional sources for wisdom. I think you know how we talk about an active solar and a passive solar system in terms of solar energy collection. Well, I think there's sort of passive tolerance and then there's affirmative love. Passive tolerance is, well, you know, I'm not going to put the white sheet on and go after him, see? That's passive. I mean, it's good. It's better than nothing. It's like a walk is as good as a hit in some sense, that's mm-hmm. true. But I'm talking about home run kind of stuff or triple kind of stuff. And that is that we really have to understand that there are people out there from different backgrounds that we would consider low status, like, you know, maybe so-called primitive people. I don't use that word anymore. I said primal or indigenous. But there are people that normally we would think have nothing to learn. We have nothing to learn from them. They have a lot of stuff to learn from us, toilets and, you know, generators and, you know, Jell-O, I don't know what, all kinds of stuff. True American culture, you know. We got Elvis, I mean, we got a lot of good stuff to share out there that they need to learn for their well-being. And that's true. We do have a lot of good stuff to share. You know, I've romanticized sort of the South Sea Islands have put ourselves down. That's basically an immature position. We have lots of good stuff. You know, Boeing has lots of good airplanes out there to share with people in other parts of the world who don't make planes as well or as efficiently. And thank God, and people in China, for that reason, are buying Boeing airplanes now, because the Chinese are very pragmatic. They may be communist up the kazoo, but when it comes to airplanes, they're buying Boeing, you know, right? So, I guess what I'm saying is that we have to take that same thing on. We have to go to the least of these, quote-unquote, our brothers and sisters. And this means children, this means animals, this means nature, this means people of color, this means so-called primitive people. And we have to basically say, as I said one time, it's a really important moment in my life. I had the chance to spend 3 days with Maya Angelou, kind of up close and personal. And I asked her one time, I said, Maya, teach me how to pray. And she was kind of stopped for a moment. And she said, why did you ask me that question? Of course, all of us in this room know that it's Master, teach me how to pray. Our Father, right? But I think that we have to ask each other, we have to ask other people and nature the question as if God is working very actively within them. Because when we do that, that's really a prayer to them for the God which is in them to take a more active role in their lives. It's sort of in the line of children need examples, not advice. There's another one that an example is the best sermon. It's also an English proverb. It's true. And one of the ways that we can be role models is to show the people that look up to us that we will go to people that are non-traditional sources of wisdom and ask them for information and for advice. Because then the people who look at us are going to say, gee, my dad just went and asked that child for something. And in my classes, I say, you know, all of us maybe have something to offer. And you think that I'm sort of, this is like a restaurant, you come here and I'm going to supply you with a meal. But I say, I want you to think about this class as a potluck of wisdom and learning. And you know, when you go to a potluck, each of us brings our best dish. Or if you're like me, you bring root beer or something. But when we create something, we create our best dish. And I said, all of our dishes together are better than anything that I can offer. And I say, I'll prove it to you. And they say, how? I say, write down your IQ on a piece of paper, what you think your IQ is. And I usually bring a little calculator to class, right? So get all these IQs for 25 people, what they think. A few people might cheat, but that's okay, one way. So there's as many cheat lower than cheat higher, which is kind of an interesting comment. But you kind of get all these IQs and you add up, and I say, wow, this class has an IQ in five figures. In other words, we collectively are smarter than Einstein, by far. And this is what community ultimately means. If we can draw on the virtues of different cultures who have, after all, faced different but similar realities in our work, in our lives, that we will really be able to make this a world of peace where we learn from each other, where we don't only tolerate each other, but where we respect and love each other. And in our own small way, this little green book, which, by the way, you can get at a bookstore, it's a message from our sponsor, which is being translated into Chinese, by the way, which I'm pretty happy about, is a contribution to that understanding that wisdom isn't just from our own traditional sources. Yeah, and so that's basically, it's exactly 12:40. Teachers always aspire to end on the bell. So thank you all for sharing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.